Good afternoon. I'm Kimberly Enard. I am with MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. I want to thank Dr. Zaya because you actually provide a really great setup for my talk because I'm focusing on Latino elderly Medicare beneficiaries in the Houston market, and a lot of the demographic information that you gave regarding elderly Hispanics in general is really very relevant and helpful to the project that we did. I wanted to acknowledge the study co-authors, and in fact, I have to admit and confess that Dr. Navarez and I really came into the project mostly to sort of look at the data and start to analyze the data. The other people on the project really did all the heavy lifting in terms of designing the study and the intervention, going through all the IRB processes, and actually delivering the intervention. So the objectives really from my perspective for my section of this study presentation is to really sort of talk a little bit about patient navigation and discuss some of the characteristics of populations that may benefit from patient navigation, to look at some of the outcome measures that may be helpful in really being able to evaluate whether or not patient navigation is effective because there's some controversy as to how effective patient navigation really is, and to discuss some of the programs and policies that may support patient navigation in elderly populations. And basically we'll go through just a quick background on patient navigation and the Pharos project, which is the project that we focused on in Houston, and I'll talk about the study design, the participant characteristics, some of the key intervention activities that were undertaken as part of this project, a few selected results because the data set that has been developed as a result of this project is an extremely rich data set, and obviously would take all day to go through all of those particular outcomes, so I just focus on a couple, and then what some of the implications and conclusions are. So patient navigation is basically a process by which patients are guided through and around barriers to the healthcare system. Both previous speakers talked some about some of the activities that are necessary to help people who may have some additional challenges when it comes to the healthcare system. And in particular with regard to cancer care, to sort of help people deal with barriers that may be related to prevention and early detection, as well as from the diagnosis point through treatment and survivorship and end-of-life care if that should become necessary. And this concept was first introduced by Harold Freeman in 1990 to support poor and uninsured cancer patients in the Harlem area. One of my colleagues, Lucinda Navarez, is a social worker by training, and she calls it Social Work 2.0, so because a lot of the activities are very much related to the activities that social workers and caseworkers normally do as part of their daily activities with patients. More recently, patient navigation has been expanded to include the timely movement of individuals across the entire healthcare continuum for cancer, but also for other chronic diseases, in particular because a lot of cancer patients, as treatment and diagnosis and treatment for cancer has gotten better, more cancer patients are surviving. But in many cases, a lot of the they develop other chronic diseases, heart disease, for example. Sometimes, you know, because they're living longer, and the longer you live, the more likely you are to develop other chronic diseases, but also because sometimes the treatment associated with cancer accelerates other types of chronic conditions. And so from a cancer standpoint, it's important to be able to address some of the survivorship issues as well. Some of the main activities that patient navigation is really designed to do is to deal with issues such as, you know, communication barriers, things like literacy, culture, and language, some of the psychological barriers of many patients, depending on their culture and, you know, their culture, their age, things like that. They may have issues with regard to fear and distrust of the healthcare system or of a particular type of treatment. treatment. And so when you have patient navigators, particularly patient navigators who maybe come from that same culture, they not only understand that more, they're able to communicate on a different level than people who may not be from that particular culture. Dealing with financial issues, for example, helping people apply for public insurance and assistance programs. For elderly patients, you know, once if they qualify for Medicare, as we know, Medicare is not, once you qualify, it's not so difficult to maintain coverage. But for people who are a little bit younger and maybe Medicaid recipients or relying on Medicaid, for example, we know that there's a lot of issues with regard to people reapplying and maintaining continuous coverage for Medicaid, and so patient navigators can be effective in that regard. And then also just dealing with some of the health system hassles. I mean, I think we all, if you use the healthcare system, a lot of times you know it's not so easy to get appointments when you need the appointments, to get the referrals, to get the care coordination, and then also some of the social support services. Because, you know, as we know, with some people who have more challenges with regard to accessing the health system, some of those barriers can be insurmountable, and people sometimes just give up. So these are things that patient navigators can help with. We focused in our center a lot on what some of the health disparities that can be addressed using patient navigation, and I'll go through these very quickly. But with regard to some of the cancer issues, you can things like timely cancer screenings, early disease detection. In African American women, for example, we are less likely to have breast cancer, but when we do have breast cancer, we're diagnosed at a much later stage, and therefore mortality rates are much worse. Things that patient navigators can help with are just educating people about screening guidelines, identifying programs that people may be able to access to get care, educating patients about the early signs and symptoms. They can also sort of deal with things that have to do with healthcare access and coordination. There's a big push with healthcare reform to try to get people into medical homes, which is a little bit a more comprehensive concept than the primary care provider, because with the medical home, they're trying to sort of manage the patient before they come to the door. Things helping people to be able to identify and maintain those medical homes, also helping them be compliant with evidence-based care provider recommendations. And these are things that activities that navigators can engage in can support some of those efforts. I have some of them on the screen. I won't read through all of them. Also, as I mentioned before, maintaining insurance coverage, actually getting insurance coverage in the first place, and then also maintaining it, because a lot of times people are eligible for some programs that would be beneficial to them and they don't apply. Or, as I said before, sometimes they have difficulties maintaining coverage because of the continuous application process to continue to be able to verify their eligibility for some of these programs. And then, as I said before, also issues that were related to diversity and cultural competency, language barriers, different cultural views, provider bias and uncertainty. Sometimes people are just, when you're dealing with people who have different views or from different cultures, sometimes there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of making recommendations, and so navigators can be involved as part of that process to sort of bridge that gap and then sort of extend that to the entire healthcare team. So the particular project that I'm going to talk about today was part of the Cancer Prevention and Treatment Demonstration Project that was launched by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Service, or CMS. It was a national program to evaluate patient navigation as a strategy to reduce disparities in cancer screening and treatment in the United States. CMS awarded cooperative agreements to six different sites. They included Salt Lake City, Molokai, Hawaii, Houston, Newark, New Jersey, Detroit, Michigan, and Baltimore, Maryland. And each site was sort of charged with and selected because they had access to particular patient populations. So, for example, the Baltimore site focused on African Americans. The Houston site focused on Latinos. Each site implemented two separate trials between October 2006 and December 2010. They had a screening trial, which was to sort of look at patient navigation as a strategy to promote adherence to cancer screening. And this was for people who had no previous cancer diagnosis, and the guideline that they used were people who did not have a previous cancer diagnosis within 5 years of the time that they conducted the pre-screening interview. And then there was a treatment trial, and those were people who actually did have a diagnosis of cancer within 5 years of the screening screening for the trial. And this was for people who had breast cancer, cervical cancer, colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, and lung cancer. And so the study that the Center for Research on Minority Health, which is now the Center for Health Equity and Evaluation Research at MD Anderson, came up with is Facilitated Assistance Research and Outreach Services, or FAROS. And FAROS is the Spanish word for lighthouse. And the principal investigator for the project was Dr. Lovell Jones, who is the head of the center and also my mentor. And the study objective really was to train and to deploy certified community health workers to provide education and support services in order to measurably improve cancer screening and treatment outcomes, specifically for Latino Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries in Houston. And in Texas, I know this isn't true for all states, but in Texas there actually is a certification process for community health workers. And a lot of the people who participated as the community health workers for this trial came from multiple disciplines, but they all went through very specific training to be part of this. They recruited quite a few participants, looked at more than 18,000 different potential participants in Houston. They ended up triaging over 2,300 and actually randomized about 2,300 participants to the two different arms that I discussed before, the treatment arm and the screening arm. The screening arm was a lot larger than the treatment arm because there were many fewer people who actually had a previous cancer diagnosis. And within those two arms, they did have an intervention and control group. And as I said before, people were randomized into these particular groups. This is a look at the participant characteristics. As you can see that the for both arms, if you look at them separately between the screening and the treatment and the intervention and control groups within those arms, it looks like the randomization process worked pretty well when it came to the age of the recipients. They're very closely matched within the screening arm and then within the treatment arm. Same was true for gender. Most of the participants for this were considered white Hispanics. In fact, most of them were, we did collect this data, I'm not presenting it here, but in terms of the country of origin or the whether or not they were Mexican origin or Puerto Rican origin, or and most of them were Mexican origin Hispanics. Most of the participants had high school or less education, about 80% in the screening arm, and then a little bit on the treatment arm. There's a little bit more. You had some of the participants had a little bit more education. Most of the participants had pretty low income. 60% of them had household incomes lower than 20,000. You do have some here that have high, are in the 20,000 to 50,000 range, but this is based on their household income. And as I'll show you in a second, a lot of these people weren't living on their own, so there were people in the household who were working, so that would have raised their income, beyond what we would expect a senior who probably isn't working would be bringing in. There were, I won't talk through every single point here. You had a pretty good mix of people who were currently married and not. Most of the participants, 90% and above, had living children. And a lot of the folks were actually living with those children. I don't have a line here for that. And more than half of all of the participants primarily spoke Spanish in their homes. Not to say that they, and they had the option of completing these, the information when they did the screening, they could be interviewed in English or Spanish. So that was not a limiting factor. Most of them had access to a usual source of care provider, and most of them also had access to an office or clinic as their usual source of care provider. So some of the key intervention activities that were conducted by the community health workers, they counseled a lot of them regarding the American Cancer Society screening guidelines. They educated patients about the importance of health and well-being, trained them about how to talk to their doctors, discussed with them specific printed materials, mailed different materials to them regarding health topics, provided information about nutrition, education, and information. In fact, one of the community health workers actually is a nutritionist by trade, and she was bilingual, but she was trained specifically to do the patient navigation for this project as well. They also did things like facilitate transportation for medical tests and related services, scheduled appointments, followed up with patients to make sure they were keeping their appointments, found out why they missed appointments if they did miss an appointment, and tried to sort of troubleshoot and help them be able to get to those appointments when necessary. They made a lot of referrals to social services agencies to help them deal with issues beyond just specific health care, things like housing and insurance and food and dental care. And, you know, during this intervention, we had Hurricane Ike. And a lot of people had extended outages, and so the patient navigators were able to help them sort of manage some of the challenges that were related to that. And they also were able to help with social, emotional, and family support. Additionally, after Hurricane Ike, there were a lot of issues with people being able to keep track of their families because, phones and issues like that. So the patient navigators were able to help with that, in addition to helping them find items that they might need to support their help, like a refrigerator, for example. They directly provided or arranged for translation and interpreter services when needed. And they also provided child care information or arranged for child care services, because a lot of the seniors in this population, as part of their family, part of their role was to help provide child care when maybe their children were at work. And so that was a barrier for some of the people. They couldn't get to these appointments because it interfered with their child care responsibilities, and so the navigators were able to assist with those types of activities. And so I'm going to go quickly through a couple of selected results. We found that we looked at mammography within 2 years. This is for the people who with no cancer diagnosis, or people in the screening arm. About 75% of both the intervention and control patients had, at baseline, had a mammogram within unadjusted, had a mammogram within the past 2 years. At baseline, the odds ratio, when I hear I'm talking about the odds of having a mammogram for navigated patients versus not unnavigated patients, there really was no difference, no significant difference either at baseline or at time two follow-up. And in this case, we're looking at a one-year time frame. So it basically, we're showing that the patient navigators did not, in this case, for this outcome, in this population, did not have an effect on whether or not people had mammography. And the same was true for the colorectal cancer screenings, which we looked at a five-year window for people, men and women 50 to 75 years of age. Pretty high in this particular group, pretty high baselines, 85%, which I believe is pretty a lot higher than the national average in terms of people who had colorectal cancer screenings within 5 years. But again, there was not a significant difference for these particular outcomes. When it looking at the people in the treatment arm, looked at baseline, intervention and control, there's a little bit of a difference between when you ask people how often did you follow your doctor's advice regarding cancer treatment. The intervention group said that, you know, at a lower rate they did follow the advice less frequently than the people in the control group. But again, when we look at the odds ratio between the two groups for navigated versus unnavigated patients, there's not a significant difference between pre and post, between the baseline and the follow-up period. However, when you look at how satisfied people were with the cancer treatment they were receiving, you did have still pretty high people unadjusted at baseline who said that they were pretty satisfied, but you do actually see a significant difference from baseline to follow-up for the navigated versus unnavigated patients. So it does appear that the navigation may have had an impact on how satisfied people were with their cancer treatment. So one of the big issues, and you could probably tell if you looked at some of the ends there, one of the big issues with this project was it was specifically designed for Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries. At the same time they launched this project, CMS was also really trying to get people into managed care. And so there was a big, heavy recruitment effort in the Houston area from other people who were trying to get people to enroll in managed care. And so there was a lot of problems with retaining people in the study, because when people learned about managed care and how it might benefit them, they decided to enter into the managed care programs, which means they could no longer be part of this study. So there were a lot of issues with that, which I think may have impacted some of the results of the study, just because you had people who started and dropped out, and so your N sort of declines every time something like that happens. But still, there is some initial evidence from this and also from other studies that suggest patient navigation should at least be explored as a mechanism to improve outcomes for medically underserved populations, including elderly Latino Medicare beneficiaries. But one thing that people who work in this area really are emphasizing is that there is a very strong need to have standardized metrics to look at in terms of how you're going to measure the effectiveness, and then also to do really good comparative effectiveness research. The study design for this is a good study design. It's a strong study design. A lot of the studies that have been done in this area are more observational. A lot of them are cross-sectional. A lot of them don't have comparison groups. So it's really important, I think most of the experts say, that to really focus on strong study designs with these particular populations. There are opportunities. This is my last slide, or next to last slide. There are opportunities with healthcare reform to really include patient navigation as part of the healthcare team. There's funding for community-based interdisciplinary teams to provide support services for primary care practices. There are the ACOs that are going to be responsible for coordinating and integrating healthcare services across the continuum for a lot of these medically underserved populations. And there's also a bigger focus on increasing racial and ethnic diversity, both in the healthcare workforce and focusing on cultural competency training for healthcare providers. So when you do that, there's opportunities for people who are community health workers who really understand the cultures within their communities and are actually part of those communities to really be part of the team and help guide that. And there's also a lot more of an emphasis on actually recording racial and ethnic diverse data so that you understand better the differences between the groups based on race and ethnicity. And that's all I have for you.